Mini episode 1721 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1721. This is FDH Managing Partner coming at you with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries and the world's greatest MMA ring announcer, my great pal, Jake Jennings Digman. And we are here to recap WrestleMania. We previewed WrestleMania 40 last week, and we're going to take a look at what might have exceeded our expectations, what might not have, just various thoughts along the way here. So, Jake, great to have you back in. Thank you so much for being here, and I've been looking forward to talking to you about this and putting over the first match, or two matches, if you want to call it that, of night two. We'll get to that. What a profit you were calling it note for note.
Thank you, and Rick, I'm back in the lounge 2 weeks in a row. Man, it's not even my birthday. Feels like the old days. I like it.
I love having you in. I love talking wrestling with you. It does feel like the old days. It feels like the days when we were the fifth Beatles of Sunday Night Submission. Those were great days.
What have ever happened to the other two?
I got a feeling one of the two guys was real busy last weekend, but I don't know why I would think that. I don't know.
A lot of people needed some handicapping odds going on, clearly.
Well, we're thinking about different guys here out of the two, but yes, I'm sure the other one was busy.
Hey, it was the final four, man. You know, it was the final four. Yeah. Business was good.
Well, that's true. That's true. You know, my mind wasn't even going there, but you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. One of them was focused in one direction, one in the other area, and I do know that. It was a busy weekend for them. It was a busy weekend for those of us wanting to watch various things on TV. And for me, that didn't even include the Women's Final Four, notwithstanding it being on America's North Coast. I managed to steer clear of that. It would have been better if I had that on Sunday afternoon rather than watching the Cavs piss away like an 80-point lead to the Clippers. But in between all of that, that was brutal. But nights one and two of WrestleMania, and, you know, we'll get into this here. Broadly speaking, I don't know that it necessarily surprised us too much in the sense of I think we had the feeling going in there's going to be some high points both nights, and I think they were very high points in some cases, but a lot of filler. And it was basically a thing where, I mean, if this is year one of the Levesque era, as they're now calling it, I would hope that by WrestleMania 41, you've got absolute purpose for everybody up and down the card both nights. I don't think that should be too hard to achieve.
I agree, especially with, you know, having what would be, about 4.5 hours each night, roughly. So you got about 9 hours of programming. Very easily should there be a one thing right off the bat, though, that I do want to point out, as you mentioned, the filler. They don't have a lot under this new, I don't know if it's the new administration or if it's because of the way the structure is set up with Peacock. If you've noticed, all of the WWE's like PLEs, they don't do those backstage segments they used to do in years past. Like at WrestleMania, you know, you get a backstage bit, there'd be like, you know, seven legends interacting with the current guys. There's none of that. It just kind of has the, you know, goes from the next match to the next match, and I think that has to do with the way the commercials are laid out and everything on Peacock with a different tiered system. But as someone who has a career in the sport of mixed martial arts, I absolutely love that. I love that. It just goes from match to match to match, essentially. I mean, I ended up because I had the show Saturday, so I watched night two on Sunday afternoon, or I'm sorry, night one on Sunday afternoon, and they cut out all the fluff. Like, it just, they're like, you know, they said, we're going to go to, for those on Peacock Premium Plus right now, we're going to go to a backstory of this match, but it didn't It just skipped all that and just went straight to the next match, which I thought was really good for me personally, for somebody who wants to get rid of the fluff.
Well, yeah, and I was subject to all the commercials because I'm one of the cheapo guys that just pays the lesser price and gets commercials. But I will say, in terms of that, per our joking reference earlier to Sunday Night Submission, well, one of the two Titans, twin Titans from that, Kyle Ross, back when he and I had done a history of WrestleMania on the show through WrestleMania 28 back in the day, that we were talking about this in terms of the Manias leading up to Mania 28, which that was the last one that I think it was the first Cena Rock, that was the last one that we had covered. And that in those years leading up to it, it was a matter of, because of the way they were featuring The Rock and some of the other guys in there, and that they were putting such emphasis on the legends, I remember complaining back in the day and saying they really ought to be doing more to showcase the full-time guys. And what you're saying right now shows that they have indeed course-corrected on that part, at least, because you're drawing potentially a casual audience with this thing. You might be getting... I'm sure you're getting more eyeballs on the product than you're getting the rest of the year, and the focus needs to be on the guys who are there night in and night out. And yes, there's been a ton of focus on The Rock because of his role in WrestleMania 40, but right now, not having the whole thing of, like, making the main event of the evening or seeming to make it like a backstage boogeyman skit the way that they used to do, this is much better than it used to be.
Agreed. Glad to have you back on board.
Yes, yes. And so... Yeah, there were some things that did sort of encourage me along the way as I was watching this. There are some things that I am going to poop on. And right off the bat, since it's a macro-level thing, I'll get this before we get to the first match. But I had a take that I had texted you over the weekend that, as is sometimes the case with me, I may feel things that I don't necessarily feel good about personally. And this is one of those things here because by all accounts, Samantha Irvin is a very lovely person. You can tell how talented she is. Being the fiance of Ricochet, one of my favorite all-time underutilized wrestlers, and that's not a backhanded compliment to him. I love Ricochet. I just wish he was getting more shine like he was in Lucha Underground. But, again, I have every reason in the world to want to put her over, and she's got a good set of pipes. But what she does with them, you know, as I said to you when I texted you over the weekend, I mean, I've heard better screaming in pornos. I'm not a fan of the whole enunciating and emoting and there, like, that's everything that people accuse Aubrey Edwards of being as a referee, which is bullcrap, by the way. I don't think she does anything to call attention to herself. She's just reacting the way that she thinks anybody would react upon seeing sensational things in a match. But it is the people who criticize her are right in saying it's not your job to take the focus off of the competitors. And it's a thing where just in any walk of life, I don't like to see anything of where it looks like somebody's going into business for themselves. And I'm sure it's completely unintentional on her part. And like I said, I don't feel good about saying this, but it's what I feel. It's what I perceive. I'm not a fan of it.
See, and you know what, Rick, that's absolutely fine, and you're allowed to feel that way, and it's interesting because I'm in a ring announcer group of fellow ring announcers on Facebook, and one of the questions was, who are your favorite ring announcers? And my answers were, currently is Samantha Irvin, which is funny,
okay,
because she's so it's Samantha Irvin and is it Dasha Fuentes? Is that her name on AEW? The one
yes.
Who's not Justin Roberts? Yeah, if Justin Roberts
and
can just go away forever.
Anymore.
Oh well, they fired the wrong ring announcer then over there.
You're not a big fan of everybody being John.
His voice is so grating to me. It is so grating, and I just, you know, which is funny, because bringing this back, Samantha Irvin is so divisive right down the middle. There are people who absolutely hate her for her announcing style. My friends, mutual friends, agree with you. Adam, what is, you say Adam's name? Our mutual friend Adam says she just screams into the thing. The thing that I personally like is, I mean, her being cute also helps, but the thing that I personally like is as an announcer, you're always taught, you know, don't have any emotion. Don't show any emotion whatsoever. And, like, right. even we're going to skip ahead to the ending here, but the amount of emotion she showed on night two, under the previous administration, she had been fired instantaneously for showing that, for not being, you know, straight-laced and to the point. And maybe because I'm just not used to that, I find that kind of, I don't know, it's kind of something different, so I find it kind of refreshing on that point. But as far as the whole yelling thing, she definitely needs to tone it down. And if you do recall, okay. do you remember when Lillian Garcia first started on WWF back in the day? Triple H! She was horrible. If you watch if you could find old footage of me when I first started doing mixed martial arts, I was nervous and I was horrible. I think it's one of those things where hopefully Samantha Irvin can take a little bit of the criticism, because everyone has criticism, and if you don't have criticism, you don't accept criticism, your ego's too big. I did a show Saturday night and threw my back out, which was interesting. Another thing to figure out, you know, as you go on the fly to adapt and to be better at what you're doing. So I had to figure out a way to be in there and announce a show with barely moving, yet still considering, still keeping up the same amount of energy that the fans have paid the money to come to an event expect. So
sure.
I don't disagree with your take, and I see people's take on Samantha. I just think there's part of it. There's people out there who just hate her for who she is, and that's a whole other thing. I'm not saying that's you, but we know there is a certain sector who will hate her for just calling a spade because she is a female of color. They're going to hate the fact that, you know, they are in that spot. Nothing's going to change that. I think the only thing she can do is just listen to her own performances and try to get better at it. It's just I've never in recent years I haven't seen an announcer who's just so has the audience so divided like that, which is kind of interesting. And here's a fun fact, and we'll get back to the topic of this. On the same question they're asking, who are your influences? Do you have any idea, Rick Morris, of who the influences of my ring announcing style are? You're one of them you should get pretty easily right off the bat.
I mean, I see some sort of tones of possibly either of the Buffer brothers a bit. I mean, you're not that alike, because you have your own style, but I mean you have a way of and again, I'm comparing her unfavorably to you, because you have a distinct style and you're able to get in there and make the presentation, but I've never watched you, and I'm biased because you're my great friend, but
right.
I would tell you flat out if I thought you were ever making it about yourself, and you've never made it about yourself.
Because that's always rule number one. My whole purpose, I just had a conversation with somebody this past weekend about this. My entire purpose is to put the spotlight on you. It is to whoever I'm introducing. It's all about that person. To answer the question, it's not the Buffers, which is funny because everybody always says, you know, because it's MMA. They're like, oh, if you do Bruce Buffer, I'm like, I can, but I'll get sued. No, my two influences are Lynn Hart from the old Pride days. I don't know if you remember the old school Pride days. And then, of course, Howard Finkel. And once I point this out to you, once you hear me do it, you'll hear it all the time. It's similar yet different. So you remember when the Fink, whatever, like, you know, you probably could hear him in your mind on Sunday. And new!
Yes.
Because
whenever
he said
awesome.
New, it always it incited a reaction. So when I'm doing an event, my little homage to him, and I did it on Saturday, instead of and new, sometimes I do and new, but not really. It's more of the when it goes to a split decision. I go, where we have a split decision. And just the way I say split, I know the audience is going to immediately think, no matter what happens, their guy got screwed. And they're going to go, oh. I've been doing this for 15 years, and I've got it down to a science that every single time I say split, that in that tone of split decision, just that short little pause, the entire audience is going, oh, man, my guy just lost. And that's my little love letter to the Fink when I do that. So little thing to break for you there.
Hey, that's an awesome story there, and that's a thing where, yeah, I mean, the Fink, like what he did with the thing, you know, and knew, I always thought that was awesome. I do not begrudge Samantha Irvin her emotion at the end because that was a thing where, again, I got a little emotional at home seeing it. That's what wrestling is supposed to make you do. It's supposed to make you feel when it's at its very best. And that was the WWE product at its very best at the end of the show there. And I don't mean that as faint praise, even though I'm more of an AEW guy. That was them at their best. I don't begrudge her for feeling that. I begrudge her for the things that she can control, is I guess what I would say. And that's where I had no idea. You're telling me that she's divisive. I felt like I was out on an ice floe here. I'm like, I'm looking at social media. I'm like, I'm the only person in the world that doesn't like this. And so I don't feel as alone hearing you say that. Because, and again, and you're right. You're right that a lot of the haters out there are trolls and a-holes and everything like that. And I have the human decency to sit here and say that I feel badly for criticizing her, but it is my opinion of the way that she's choosing to do the job.
Yeah, and that's fair. As a fan of somebody who's watching the product, you know, you're allowed to have that criticism. Anytime anybody's out there, you know, you've got two options. You either ignore it and then you stay stationary at what you're doing, which eventually the flaws will come out even worse, or B, you improve upon it. That's it.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. And maybe they'll coach her and refine her a little more and everything like that. And again, you can add emphasis in there. You can add emphasis without yelling. And like I said, you know, again, sort of seeming to make it about yourself, even though, again, I know that's not her intent. I 100% know that. And I just,
I think on that, Rick, I think more people than her make it about her than she does. If that makes somewhat sense. I think there's more people that make it about her. I mean, like, very rare, other than, like, the main title fights, she kind of just sits off into the corner. But now we live in a world where, like, you know, they show up the little reel videos and your little stuff on, you know, the little clips that people watch now, and they show her sitting there announcing stuff, and that's just the world we live in. But I really think it's a lot more emphasis coming from others putting it on her. But and you got to also remember, too, she's been doing this, what, less than 2 years?
As a
professional ring announcer on a major, I can't recall her announcing anywhere else. She came in under, she was on one of those America's Got Talent shows. That's how she got her break. She knew somebody, I think it was Mark Henry, who actually got her the break to WWE, and she went to go train as a wrestler. And she is a lifelong wrestling fan. So there's that going for her also.
Sure.
But that's the thing, too. Like, my year two when I was announcing, oh, God, I listened to that, and I'm like, ugh. And at the time, you know, you think, oh, I'm so great, because I was also a victim of, like, I watch those old Fight Night in the Flats events, and I'm standing there, you know, yelling, here's Joe, hi, and it's like, now I would never do that, but back then I felt like the only way to get my enthusiasm out is to yell really loud so you can feel my passion, and now I can recognize as getting criticism like this of, you know, of what to do and what not to do. So I think Samantha has a bright future on her, and hopefully she can win over a couple haters.
I will just say this. You'll admit there's a world of difference between the help that you had around you back in the day that could coach you to be better and what she's got around her, okay? So it's not apples and oranges. Oh, you had been in the business the same amount of time as her. I mean, this is her full-time gig. This is something where she can be absorbing feedback from people inside the company basically 24/7. So the learning curve for her should be a heck of a lot shorter than it is for somebody that was in the position that you were back in the day. So, but again, hopefully she'll get there. And it's one of those, you know, the way that I am about anything that makes me feel like Vince McMahon fed type stuff. We talked about it last time. R-Truth, Logan Paul, I kind of put her under that banner. Like, you can say, you can stop calling yourself sports entertainment, as they're allegedly going to start doing, if for no other reason than to distance themselves from Vince. But things like what she's doing still feel sports entertainer-ish to me. That's just my personal point of view. She did have an excellent match to start out doing the ring announcing for night one, top of the show. I think we kind of anticipated that this would be the case. Rhea Ripley defeating Becky Lynch by pinfall, 17:05 for the Women's World Championship. I give this one 3¾ stars. These are two of the very best workers on the women's side in the history of the company. I would say that top tier basically involves them. Sasha Banks, I could listen to another name or two potentially being in the mix. I don't think I'd put Charlotte Flair in there. But, again, two of the very best. You expected them to have their working boots on. Oh, but Bianca Belair, I'd put her on that top tier as well, even though she was buried in another match, as we'll talk about later. But again, I thought this one was really good. 3 3/4 snowflakes from this guy.
I you know, especially knowing going into it, as I said, that Becky Lynch was very sick going into the match, to be able to pull off kind of what they did there, I felt it was like very formulaic, and I don't know, like a by the numbers. I just felt like, to me, like they were holding a little something back, and that might have had something to do with the illness that Lynch had there. I mean, it just felt like they never quite reached that next tier on it, but as far as everything that it was supposed to do, it served its purpose. It established, you know, Rhea Ripley as the dominant force that she is. As we talked about on the pre-show or our preview of this, I see her holding that belt for a very, very long time. I don't see there's really, that's the problem they have now. I mean, other than a Bianca Belair, maybe down the road with some seasoning, a Jade Cargill. You can always, you know, you circle back to Charlotte Flair, but let's get some new talent in here. Let's create some new blood. It'll be intriguing to see who they can build up in the next year that can give the fans an idea that the fans could even take as a possible threat to Mommy, because Becky Lynch was really the only one who was at that level right now. So this is going to be, you know, they gotta build some contenders so that the fans actually believe will have a chance to take Mommy down.
Well, they were certainly doing their best on commentary, presenting the situation as being akin to Bret Hart in 92. When he allegedly had 104 degree fever and dropped the title to the Intercontinental title to the Mountie. They were mentioning that with her. I will say this, and again, I don't know how much they were embellishing or not, but I hope they were embellishing the strep throat part, because that's nothing to F with. And that's a thing
right.
Where if she had strep throat, she shouldn't have been out there. And it's like, I know it's one of your bigger matches that you're promoting, but the health of the you know, wrestlers has to come first. So I hope she didn't have strep throat.
Yeah, and for Rhea Ripley's sake, I hope she did have strep throat.
Yes,
highly
contagious. Yeah, I mean, you can't imagine Rhea would have been too happy about that match, and the referee and everything like that. Yeah, I mean, as somebody that's had strep throat multiple times in my life, and as much as I always got mad when my parents, when I was growing up, made sure that I would get the shot to get rid of it, you know, that can cause, you know, heart issues and everything like that, so that was disturbing when they mentioned the strep throat part. That almost kind of took me out of it, because it just was like I felt so bad for everyone involved, hoping that wasn't the case. But you're right. The match, and I would attribute it to that. I think we're looking at 4 stars in my estimation, 4 1/4 maybe. If you know, they probably were holding it back because of the health things here. The next match here, 6-pack ladder match for the now formerly undisputed WWE Tag Team Championship, A-Town Down Under. What a god-awful name. One of the things about the Triple H regime that I'm not liking is they're going with these indie-type names. If people think that AEW has too many indie-ish-sounding names, A-Town Down Under, New Catch Republic, you already had British Strong Style. Why you got to change their name? But A-Town Down Under, they take the SmackDown titles, Awesome Truth, Miz and R-Truth, with the Raw Tag Team titles, defeating Judgment Day, hashtag DIY, the Young Day, New Day, New Catch Republic. So it's, again, it was the usual cluster kind of a deal. First ladder match, I think we've seen where it went this way vis-a-vis. The match must continue after the first set of belts comes down. The announcers did absolutely nothing to mention at the outset, nor make a big deal of along the way, the fact that this was splitting up the tag team titles, but it is indeed what happened. So we reverse what happened at WrestleMania 9 when the tag team titles were actually, or not 9, I'm sorry, 25. It was in 2009. That was my faux pas. In 2000, I think they united the Raw and SmackDown belts on the pre-show, actually, which was very much in keeping with that era and the way they handled stuff. This was at least on the main show. I give it 2 3/4 stars, just in the sense of, I sort of take everything literally, the 0 to 5 star thing, and as much as I revere Dave Meltzer, I don't ever go above 5, and I don't think that's legit. I just regard 2.5 as right in the middle of the spectrum. Like, if you're watching like an average match on TV, not that great, not that bad, So this being Mania, the 2.75 for both nights, spoiler alert, that's about as low as I went on any of these because it's WrestleMania, you have the atmosphere. It's hard to be below average because everybody these days has great athleticism. But it was just basically a spot fest with the ladders and, you know, aren't we sort of inured to all of that about a quarter century plus into starting to see these types of matches? So, you know, to me it was what it was.
I agree with you. I've seen enough ladder matches that if I never see another ladder match again, I'll probably be okay. And I was there for the first – I was in the house, as you probably were too, for the first ever tag team ladder match.
I wasn't, but that's awesome for you.
It's like you can just see, like, you know, because it was new and it was fresh. Now you can just tell, like, you know, all of these, whether it's this or the Money in the Bank or whatever it is. It's just a bunch of guys who don't know how to climb. That's all it is. And it's climbing and falling down, climbing and falling down. And, like, I agree with everything you said on your statement about, you know, they didn't do a very good job of explaining that, you know, that you could, so, like, the belts are going to be split up. So, like, when A-Town Down Under grab the tag belts, it's like, so are they out of the match? Are they still in the match? They didn't really clarify that. And then they have Grayson Waller go through a ladder while clinching the SmackDown Tag Team title. I go, well, way to bury your new champion right off the bat. He's had it for, like, less than 30 seconds, and he just, like – they needed to clarify a lot better. Like as soon as the SmackDown belts are grabbed, that should have been it. Okay, you guys are out. You're the SmackDown Tag Team Champions. You know, one of the two, or because they didn't really kind of say what was that. Very bad job of explaining what was happening. It was felt fly by night on that. The other problem with this is, and especially the crowd like that, for as much as you know. As we addressed on the pre-show, and I said that, you know, I could very much see them giving it to R-Truth because he is the most over of the bunch. Miz is just lucky to be there, and I was right. None of those other guys, I don't care how good they are, how hard they work, how many stars they can get, they're not over, and they haven't done a good job of getting them over, which is unfortunate. That whole Butch run severely hindered Pete Dunne on that.
I know.
You know, so that is just like, you know, you're climbing from a hurdle. And, like, we talk on DIY. They changed everything about them that the audience that liked them from NXT would have liked. So, like, they literally came out as they were literal DX cosplayers coming out here. So it's like
right. You
immediately look like you're less than as a result of that. And it just this was just one where, I mean, like, you know, it is what it is. But, like, I don't know. I remember I was at one of the shows. It was the late. The late Luke Harper and Dolph Ziggler had a ladder match in Cleveland
yes. At
one of the TLC
that
was events.
Awesome. The only match
I
on
thought
the show
it was
that didn't suck.
Boring. I was bored out of my mind. It was two guys who couldn't climb a damn ladder. They'd climb to the top, fall back down. It was awful. And everybody's just like, you know, a one-on-one ladder match. I'm like, dude, you can end this in 30 seconds. Like, I'm just – and everyone around me is chanting, this is awesome. And I'm like – this is, like, formulaic, and I don't know, and now they add more and more people to it. It's just, I guess, you know, I'm a skeptic in this. Like, the gimmick itself, you know, it's just, you know, the floor is lava. It's just two guys, just guys who can't climb. That's all I see. There's no psychology to it to me, and being there at that match, you yourself, like, that was awesome, and I'm like, no, to me personally, it wasn't. It was just like, okay, this guy can't climb, that guy can't climb. That's all I got out of it. I don't know. Maybe that's, you know, just me in this, but, you know, different strokes for different folks. But it's just like, you know, and every once in a blue moon, you'll get the guy who jumps in and goes, wee, and there's that fun little bit to it. But I don't know. I just think it's a tired gimmick, and there's only so many things you can do with it. And I think, unfortunately, we may have reached them all other than guys getting severely injured, because then they're going to add it up even more, and guys will do stuff, and we see guys that, you know, I'll watch, I think it was a Ring of Honor or something several years last year. It was under the Tony Khan administration. Somebody did like a 450 flip, which was just stupid for no reason, to be like, okay, look, you can do gymnastics. Awesome. Doesn't help you win the match. And the dude broke his leg. And I'm like, that's the kind of crap that's going to happen if guys keep doing this stuff. So I get what it was there for. It was there to get a bunch of guys on the card. It served its purpose, I guess, in that front. We're going to see what's going on. Now we have, like, you know, now we're coming out of this. We have 7 tag teams that still aren't over.
Yeah, no, all of that is true. And it is this thing. boy, if you thought that match in 2014 was bad, you must have wanted to gouge your eyes out the rest of the show, because everything else objectively was just the drizzling chiznets. That was a bad
show. On that show?
Yeah.
On the show in 2014, oh yeah, I don't remember the rest of it. I think it was a stairs match or something where the Big Show just. I vaguely remember that, but I don't remember much of anything else on that show. I just remember that ladder match sticks out because I see everybody praising it. I'm like, what am I missing here? Like, it's just, I don't know, just two guys who can't climb a ladder.
Well, you know, you're not wrong about that part, but I thought it was pretty good aside from that, if there can be an aside from that, but it's, you know, again, ladder matches are tough to pull off, and again, they're so overexposed, because going back to, again, when you saw the first one in Cleveland, or the first tag team one, I should say, they did the Shawn Michaels Razor deal back in 94, but, you know, and it was a novelty at that point, but these matches are overexposed. I'll say this, the one thing I'll say is that they didn't have Theory and Waller leave at that point, because kayfabe point of the match was not to split up the belts. We'd heard the reporting that the belts were going to be split up, but because that wasn't the whole thing going in, like, there will now be SmackDown and Raw tag team champions, that's why they didn't have them leave, because theoretically they could have claimed the other belts as well. The fact that they didn't is why they're split up. So they have a storyline explanation as to why it's split up, as opposed to randomly saying, you know, we'll have different champions on different shows. So for yeah,
guys, they just get rid of the belts. Like, now that you guys see them, how hideously ugly they are.
Yeah,
like,
I was reminded of that. Now, I was thinking of like the old school pennies and everything like that, but these are disturbingly similar to the pennies of the late 2000s. So no, you're right. They suck. And dude, I have never, ever, ever been a fan of the colored strap. I don't care if it's red, if it's blue. When the Ultimate Warrior had it be white, and the strap is supposed to be black, brah. Let's not deal with any of this stuff.
I don't know. I kind of like Cody Rhodes' white IC title, but that was about it. The only one I ever liked that was a different color.
Nothing will ever be funnier than I was over at your place watching SummerSlam 2016 when the crowd just shat all over the Fruit Roll-Up title, the Universal title. Yeah.
Boo.
I mean, as they should have.
It was horrible.
You're wanting to give credibility to your new world title here, which, again, any time that you go to split up the world titles, I mean, they've done it in the worst way possible. Eric Bischoff pulls a belt out of a briefcase in 02 and hands it to Triple H. Triple H comes on the show last year and just creates a new belt out of nowhere. At least there was a tournament that time. But again, you know, they've done a lot of things poorly over a period of time. Here's hoping they learn from that.
They definitely need to get rid of that. That's very much a Vince-ism, the whole color coordinated everything, like red, blue. They need to just get rid of all that. Just, you know, just be gone with the whole color coordinated. I don't know. Make the Raw tag belts look like the old school NWA tag belts, because I'm biased on those, and make the SmackDown ones look like, make them look like the SmackDown titles from 02. Those were great. I like those.
Yeah. And that's one of the great things about, people do not, you know, recognize, people who are not wrestling fans, just how much wrestling belts are art, as far as like how you can go back over time. I like this one. I like this one. That, wouldn't it be great if they could take something like this? You know, like, that's the great thing about wrestling belts, is that you can just kind of have these kind of conversations of what you'd like them to look like. And again, no more colored straps ever. Just do the black straps from here on in. So here's hoping they get rid of that moving along. But the next match here, again, another kind of whatever kind of a match. Rey Mysterio and Andrade defeating Santos Escobar and Dominic Mysterio in 11:05. A match most noted for the run-in of Jason Kelce and I think it was Thomas from the Eagles at the end there with the Eagles-esque luchador masks. And, again, at least it had, you know, a storyline reason for, you know, them, you know, coming in. You know, they're in Philadelphia and everything like that. So there was a little bit of a tie-in at the very least. And it was a way to get out of the match without anything else, you know, really going down here. Dominic's not going to lose any heat for losing the match. And, again, Dragon Lee was storyline taken out, so it ended up being Andrade in the match, who, again, I know they see as being a bigger star at this point in time. Two LFI alumni, coincidentally here, in the LWO, or I'm not even sure if he's in the LWO with Ray, or it was just a guest appearance. I don't know, and I really don't care that much, but, you know, again, to me, it was what it was. I gave it 2¾ stars.
Okay, so this was my least favorite match of both nights, and for a variety of reasons. Number one, this reminded me, I'm going to call this the thrown together on Rampage match, where they just have a bunch of guys who are backstage, and they got to put them in a match together. And then I'm watching this, and first of all, the one guy, and this is going to be a testament to it, he gets on the ropes, and he does the spot where he gets lunged, like Carlito fires him like a cannon into the crowd, into up the ramp, and he's like going, "This is my WrestleMania moment." And the only thing that popped into my head was Bobby Hill going, "I don't even know who you are."
Yeah.
Like, who is this guy? And my other complaint to this, last time I checked, this was not a no disqualification match. So there was
right.
nor was it under Lucha Libre rules. So apparently, whoever this official was, I don't know his name because they haven't said all the officials' names yet, but he clearly went to the Rick Knox School of Officiating, where you just turn a blind eye so they can get all their 37,000 spots in that's convenient for what is going to be happening in the match, and then counts one, two. And so, I don't know. I'm watching. I looked over at my better half, and I was like, "Oh God, this is Rampage level bad. This is just you just swapped a guy out." Which, you know what? Fine, whatever. Because I'm not sold on the Wish version of what you call them. I did like where your head was at, where you know you thought that that Dragon Lee should have been showcased as you know the next face of the Latino community in WWE, the next Latin sensation. Only problem with that is he will always come across as a cosplayer because he looks just like Rey Mysterio. Similar layout, everything. So it's like, why do I want that when why do I want you when I have the real thing sitting right here? So I thought the trade up to Andrade was nice because at least he has some character differential. But I don't buy Andrade as a baby face. You look at that guy and you go, oh, he's a heel. Like everything about him, he just reeks of heelness. I don't know. So I was expecting by the end of this, I'm just expecting all of these guys to turn on Rey Mysterio, and that's going to be that. But it's like, I just felt like this was just, you know, a spot fest for the sake of spots that didn't really do anything to tell an overall story going into it coming out. Like, I don't feel better. I don't feel worse for it coming out of it. And like you said, Dom's going to get his heat right back. And I know it sounds like I'm knocking Dragon Lee, and I really do want him to be successful, but there's no way he'll ever be as successful as people want him to be if he's stuck with the label of the next, because the next is like the new, and the new nor the next will ever get over, and no matter what, they're the new of nor the next of. So he has to do something like, if there was anybody who could be that, fill that mantle, it's the guy we mentioned earlier, Ricochet, from his Prince Puma days. You know, he's the guy that could, and he's got his own personality and his own distinctiveness to him that sticks out. I don't even know, he has to be, he's Hispanic, right? Pretty sure he is.
Some at least here.
I don't know if he's mixed, I don't know what it is, but like from the work he did in Lucha Underground was just fantastic. And it's like, tap some more into that. That's your guy right there. It's just hard, again, to rehab someone that's already been here. And how do you rehab all the people under, you know, that got slaughtered under the Vince regime? Hopefully they can do it. But, yeah, this is less is more. We spent too much time on this match. It was what it was. Some would say it could have been a popcorn or a bathroom break match.
Very much so. The only counterpoint I'll make on Dragon Lee is this, is that Rey Mysterio's career, he's still performing at a great level. Not what it was 25 years ago, but you can't sustain that forever. But he is the equivalent of a football game that's in triple overtime. I mean, borrowed time doesn't even begin to say it. I mean, this man's knees, basically, haven't they been, like, replaced with the Blue Man Group PVC pipes at this point? I mean, he's not going to, you know, again, I'm not saying the next couple weeks, months, within the next year. But I'm talking long term.
Right. The man is in his 50s. He has far days behind him than he does ahead as an in-ring competitor.
That's my point. Is it like for Dragon Lee to get the rub from him right now, 5 years from now, is anybody going to be watching Dragon Lee going, hey, he reminds me of a guy I used to watch 5 years ago named Rey Mysterio? I just don't think that's going to happen, Jake. I think it's a chance for him to...
Here's the problem with that, though, is Rey Mysterio, the reason why Rey Mysterio is Rey Mysterio because he was the first Rey Mysterio.
Yes.
Nobody
he was Rey Mysterio Jr. He was Jr.
Okay.
Back in WCW.
Yes. But, correct, he was. But as far as, like, you know, that style, and people saw it, I remember watching those matches in 96 against Malenko. Heck, I'll go back and watch the one. I remember getting – first time I saw him was 96 against Malenko. And then I got the tapes from the Psicosis matches in ECW. And then I watched some other stuff. And I'd never seen anything. We'd never seen that. So it was amazing. Unfortunately, we see that on, like, you know, three to four times a week, depending on who's wrestling on what show. So it's so much harder to stick out as far as, like, you know, if there was five guys doing the moves like Rey Mysterio was doing back in 1996, he'd have got lost in the shuffle. Everyone was like, oh, look, he's so small. It was because he was everything about him was so unique. And unfortunately right now, I don't think there is that uniqueness. And it'll be, you know, like, Ricochet, I hate to bring it back up, but he's the closest one to it that can do stuff like, you know, when he does that running flip over the top rope and lands on his feet and stuff like that, that it's like, okay, they need to find a way, and this is the problem, that every single one of the guys, and it's, please don't take this as an AEW burial, because I'm not, but all of the luchadors on AEW have zero idea of how to interact with the crowd. They just come out there and do their spots. Pentagon. Penta.
Yeah.
He's the only one. Him and Phoenix a little bit can do it, you know, a little bit of that reaction. Everybody else is just like, you know, they just do spots for the sake of spots, and they're interchangeable. I can't tell you. One was called Gravity. One was something else. One's like Axiom. I think it might be NXT. My point is they're interchangeable, and it doesn't matter because they all do the same crap. They do the same stuff, and there's nothing special about these guys. They need to find that something that makes them special to stand out, and whoever does that is going to be, like, you know, the next, not face of Lucha, but I guess in a way, like, you know, the next big Latin star. But they have to, I mean, sure. And again, they've tried, and everyone the WWE has tried it with has failed. And we might be on Andrade 2.0, but I guarantee you, by the time we're talking again, if we do this conversation in a year from now, it's going to be Andrade back on the heel side of things. Because there's just, it's like Del Rio, you know, you look at that guy and you go,
right.
Oh, he just seems like a heel. Am I going to cheer for this guy? He's rich and dresses nice. I don't want to cheer
right.
for that. And he's married to Charlotte Flair. What the heck?
That's a big heel move right there. But I will say, again, interestingly here, as you were critiquing the AEW luchas, Rampage caught a stray a couple of minutes ago there, which I didn't respond to at the time. I will say this. If you look at the CMLL guys that they've been bringing in recently, Hetchasaro, this is me being subversive, mentioning a CMLL guy during a WrestleMania review. Look it up, ladies and gentlemen. Do a YouTube search on this guy. He is unique. Now, he does a lot of, like, actual grappling and everything like that and holds and stuff like that. They're just really incredible that you don't see a lucha very much. But you're right that the AEW luchas that they've brought in have struggled to connect with the crowd. And, you know, there's language barriers and things like that and everything like that that get in the way. And I will completely second everything you said about Ricochet. Push that man if it's not too late. But instead, they're doing stuff like pushing the next two guys here. How's that for a segue? Jey Uso defeated Jimmy Uso by pinfall in 11:05 painful minutes. I'll still give this one 2.5 stars. I mean, it was perfectly cromulent. At the end, when they kind of, you know, the sequence towards the finish, I think we're looking at sub 2.5, if not for that. The whole super kick spamming, that's exactly what people accuse the Young Bucks of. It's just, you know, spots for the sake of spots and everything like that. All the super kicks to the face. What the hell was the point of that? These two guys, it was a very, very disappointing outing for the way that they built this thing up. And as I heard a couple of jokesters say, that spear off the stage from Jey to Jimmy on night 2 was better than their entire match from the night before.
I cannot disagree with you. I get with what they were going for with the emotion of it. Like, I don't want to have to do this. The problem is the execution failed miserably. Because the only thing I got out of this, I'm sure you did too, was that Jey Uso doesn't know how to throw a kick. Because this is a thing where I am, you know, it's a modern wrestling thing, and I'm gonna sound like an old timer here. I don't really care. The spamming of super kicks, like you've said, has just completely, like, taken me out of it. You know, it's like, and you know, I'm gonna critique your mentor here on this one. I hate to say this, but for some, you only because you brought him up. If this exact same match was done between the Young Bucks, Dave Meltzer would have given it 5 stars because of the emotion. You got to know the emotion. I used to be on the, like, you know, on the Meltzer side of things, but I've watched a couple of in the past few years. I mean, I'm not as passionate as other people. Like, you know, have utter disdain for the guy. I personally, and this is me. I don't put his opinion of wrestling on the same level that I once did. I don't enjoy the same wrestling that he does. I figured that out when I was watching the one of the AEW cluster around the arena matches where they just pretend to hit each other and just do stupid crap all over the building. I forget which one because they're all the same. And he's like, this was 5 stars. I go, dude, I wanted to turn this off. It was terrible. It was the same Moxley crap that he does in every single match. It's like, here comes the thumbtacks. Here comes this. It's like, it's the same crap. And I'm like, dude, what annoyed me was because this is the same guy that he would have ranked that a dud like 5 years ago. And like this, it's like, you know, like this right here was, they were going so much for that drama of it, the story, but it just, like, it just comes across that Jey Uso can't throw a kick. And it, as you said, it just drug. I mean, it wasn't to, like, you know, it wasn't to levels of Bret Hart, Vince McMahon level bad at WrestleMania, but it was like, sometimes less is more, and it's a problem that a lot of, you know, the indie stuff has this problem. They don't get that, where it's like, let your stuff breathe, and especially at WrestleMania, that's what they strive on, is the emotion, okay? You want to do that exact same sequence, but in, like, 3 kicks, he kicks him, and he's still getting back up, and he's still getting back up, and he's like, he doesn't want to do this, and finally he knocks his head off because he has to. There you go, perfectly. You know, Shawn Michaels didn't look at Ric Flair and go, I'm sorry, I love you, and then kick him 4 more times.
Right.
You know, it's like, this is not just a thing on AEW, it's the entire indie mindset of where it's like, I got to get all this stuff in, where if you get all of this stuff in, it doesn't mean anything. It's like desensitized. I saw and this makes me sad to say this, because I like Will Ospreay from what I've seen. I was watching a match with him and Kyle Fletcher, and Ospreay hit Kyle Fletcher with like a running knee strike to the back of the head, a super kick, an enziguri, and Fletcher just bounced right back up, jumped off the ropes, and did a freaking planche. And I went, so you can't kick worth a crap then. And it's just, and this is the guy who's praised as being, I've seen him do awesome stuff. His match with Omega in Wrestle Kingdom, amazing. Absolutely amazing, the stuff, the brainbuster or powerbomb move, whatever it was he did off the top rope, which we'll get into that in a match coming up. I thought, you know, holy crap, you know, blew my mind. But then I see this, and it's just like, okay, you kicked this guy in the head 3 times, he just got up and ran, so you suck at throwing kicks? Like, and it's not just a knock on him. That's just the one that popped into my head. It's a problem with, like, you know, with this modern style, which is just, you know, I hate to be an old-timer, but it just, you know, slow it down. Like, if you kick a guy in the head, the guy registers to sell the emotion. That's what we're here for. Not, oh, my God, I can do 37 moves because you entered the cheat code in on your PlayStation controller.
Yeah, and well, look, I will say this. The Ospreay-Fletcher match, probably one of the greatest athletic showcases I've probably ever seen in my life. But you're right, there was finisher spamming.
If I was at the circus, it would have been an amazing performance.
Yeah, so that's the thing, too. Like, it did have finisher spamming. Again, less is more in terms of, you know, making things count. And that is a criticism I have in modern wrestling, is that you do have finisher spamming and things like that far too often, turning things that should be finishers into transition moves because of the psychology. I do share that criticism. I will say this, that when you talk about you know, and I feel like part of the modern template for emotion probably goes back to 08. I'm sorry, I love you, super kick to the face. By the way, I only took the one super kick to finish off Flair at the end of that one, so that everything we're saying ties together here. But the WWE in recent years, I hate backstage skits that have this, all these things. Frequently I watch these guys, and it's like, to paraphrase my criticism of Samantha Irvin, I've seen better acting in porno movies. And the Usos had that on the split. There was a story, Rick. There was a story. Yeah, it sucked because those guys are, again, they're twin brothers who in real life love one another and are very close, and they couldn't go out there and convincingly pretend otherwise. And it sucks that they even tried because they were horrible at it. And it brought the match down, and again, it was the finishing sequence redeemed it to at least be an average match. But an average match at WrestleMania, particularly with the half-year-long build that this had, unacceptable. The next match we didn't expect a whole lot out of, the women's match here. Throwaway match with the tag team champions on the one side, Asuka and Kairi Sane and Dakota Kai, against Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair, I can talk, and Naomi. I will say this, that the star of this match, and again, I might get canceled for saying this, but Dakota Kai's outfit, to be sure. And again, for as much as, yeah, I mean, and look, and we've come, you know, again, did it used to be on the annoying extreme of Jerry Lawler yelling puppies relentlessly? Sure. Although I don't know that that's what he would have been yelling for this, because this wasn't so much boob-centric, but full-spectrum awesome as far as Dakota Kai. But it was a thing where, be a middle ground, because now the announcers are so scared they're going to get canceled on social media. I don't need to have one of the announcers saying, boy, there's no way I could stand up straight right now. Okay, we don't need to hear that necessarily, but we need to hear some kind of acknowledgement of how awesome this Dakota Kai S&M themed outfit was, because it was friggin' incredible, and it was better than the match itself, which I only gave 2.5 stars.
I don't even remember the match. I know the match ended with them. I remember Dakota Kai, and I remember them very meticulously, like, protecting Jade Cargill's spots to make her look good. Like, everybody else worked around her to make sure she looked like $1 million, which, you know what? Good for Jade Cargill, because that's been her entire run from the beginning of her run in AEW up until now. It's just everyone else making her look like $1 million. Not a bad gig if you can get it, but yeah, I 100% agree with you that the main star, the biggest star coming out of this one was the outfit of the choice of attire by one Dakota Kai. She went from an afterthought to, oh, who are you? I never noticed you before. Welcome. Good to have you. And it's going to be, you know, intriguing to see. It's one of those things where, like Asuka, for an example, I really think she's on like the where Nakamura was at one point. I hate to use a comparison because they're both Japanese, but where it's just like they're getting paid. She's getting paid a lot of money, and she ain't really doing a bunch of hard hitting matches anymore. So she's really kind of seems like she's just out there like, you know, having fun at this stage. She's accomplished a lot. She seems like she's out there having a good time on this run. And I watched like a couple of the videos of her out of character on her YouTube chip page. And, you know, she's still the same person she was before, very much, very, very sweet. And it just seems like, you know, I'm just kind of, as someone who's a fellow video game nerd and whatnot, I'm just, you know, I'm kind of happy for her that she looks like she's out there having a good time. But this one here, this is a come down match, I guess. I guess they were anticipating the Uso match being much more of a drama-filled epic that it did not live up to, which we are now 2 out of 3 of the brother versus brother matches at WrestleMania. Not so much. Just proving that Brett and Owen, that was kind of a fluke, in my humble opinion.
Yeah,
and, you know,
it was.
Maybe 15 years from now when two other brothers, maybe 15 years from now, Matt and Nick Jackson can do it right at WrestleMania. Who knows? I just picked them because they're the only two brothers I can think of off the top of my head that could face each other. But
something tells me that, well, they got the Creed brothers, right? You got those guys potentially.
Those guys.
You know.
I forgot about them. It was the back of the women's match. It was there. It was an excuse to get Jade Cargill on the show.
Sure. You got that. And,
oh, I got it.
Again, yeah. Well, by the way, with Asuka, you know, if they ever brought back the GTV gimmick of having the hidden cameras backstage, the thing that would make me pop is if you saw her and if you saw Asuka and Shinsuke Nakamura come up to one another, high five, and say to each other in Japanese, cash in fat checks, bro. Because that's basically, isn't that where they're both at this point?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, again, they're not getting any younger. They're both in their, I don't know how old, I think Asuka's in her, she's my age. I think she's like 41. You got Nakamura, he's in his mid-40s. So, you know, they're on the backside of their career. So make the most of what you can while you can.
Understood, yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I will say the next match here, this is an outcome neither of us saw coming. You've got in 15:30, Sami Zayn over Gunther by pinfall to win the Intercontinental Championship and ending the longest title reign in history, 666 days right on the nose there. And, again, they now appear to be setting up because the second Raw after WrestleMania is going to be in Montreal, and it is going to be Sami Zayn against Chad Gable. So they appear to be setting up the heel turn that we thought might be coming here. It's probably coming up subsequently here. But in terms of this match, again, it was really good. And Gunther, again, for a guy who is, you know, very much sort of like no-nonsense and sort of like the modern-day Stan Hansen, like the splashes off the top and everything like that, good to see him mix it in on a big stage here. And it's one of the things that makes Gunther, I think, not just one of the greatest big men of today, but one of the greatest big men of all time, is that he has that gear that he can go to. As was pointed out a couple different places on social media, the whole thing with, like, you know, the shotgun chops to the chest, it does lose its oomph a little bit in a stadium setting as far as the ability to really hear the chops. And, again, everything, by the way, was weird sound-wise Saturday night. It was a quiet crowd. It was a cold crowd. They kept flashing. It was very inane the way they kept flashing the temperature on the screen. Like, why
That's
don't you
so
just bring
bizarre.
In? Yeah. Well, you know, it was like, hey, don't blame us. Here's why the crowd is dead. And it was. Like,
I almost
they
thought
going
they
out of
did
way.
That. I almost thought they did that in case they had to go on a rain delay.
Oh,
okay. Like they were like explaining in case, you know, because they kept saying, oh, the weather's bad, blah, 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 in case they had to go for as an out, in case they had to do a rain delay or something. I don't know. It was just, the first time they did it, it was like, okay, that's funny. You know, it's cold. But then they just kept doing it all night long. And I'm like, we get it. It's cold. I was like, where's this going?
If they had a rain delay and there was a shot of Corey Graves in a poncho, does that mean that he would be the AEW world champion 4 years from now?
He would definitely be the top contender for it. Yes, that's how it works.
He would. And by the way, since we're talking about announcers, side note for a minute, and it's a thing where, and this is full spectrum for me, this is a term I'm using a lot, but in terms of this guy as a sports talk show host and everything like that, count me as one of the people in this country, and apparently the tiny minority, that has never gotten it about Pat McAfee in any way, shape, or form. And the things that, again, back when, Vince isn't producing him like the other guys, back when they were all robots. Back when Michael Cole was one of the worst pro wrestling announcers in history, or sports entertainment announcers, whatever, because of the way Vince was producing him, and now we find out Michael Cole was actually very good when left to his own devices, like Pat McAfee might have seemed to some like a breath of fresh air at that point in time. At a point now when nobody is getting the Vince McMahon overproduction, Pat McAfee is exposed, in my book. Because, again, it's just the same goofy one-note frat boy gimmick that he does 24/7, whether it's on ESPN or on commentary. And ironically, again, just makes it feel more like sports entertainment to me. For all that people thought that he was the biggest anti-Vince type announcer that they had back in the day, now he just reminds me of Vince because it's a thing of like, oh, here's Pat McAfee out here being wacky. It just brings back bad Santino Marella vibes to me.
It's an interesting take on it. I do agree with the whole being overexposed thing. I don't know. I kind of like the one time when he came on in commentary, he said they were live on the cock because my friends and I always call it the cock, and the fact that he said that on pay-per-view, I was like, oh, okay, I guess you can get away with that. But, yeah, I agree. I think McAfee is like, you know, I enjoy it because it's his style is different. But also at the same time, I can see where you're saying how it could get very grating and tiresome. And I think going back to, like, you know, the whole thing with, like, less is more, where it will behoove him to go away. And I also think that McAfee could contribute more in a three-man setting where he just kind of chimes in and adds something here and there, as opposed to like the full-on color guy, in my opinion.
Sure.
I think he's good for what he adds. It adds that, like, that quote-unquote legitimacy, I guess, from the outside world, you know, because that's, you know, with anything, you always want to get as many eyes on the product as possible. But I very much, I could see him fitting in, like, you know, I like how they used him with him in the three-man with Graves, because I think Graves offsets that. I think Barrett could also offset that too, you know. So, yeah, I see your criticism. It's not a hill I'm going to die on, but I can see why you feel the way that you do.
Well, I will say this, something that you probably have no knowledge of, because I'm guessing that you don't have Dynamite on mute right now the way that I do as we're recording this, but you saying live on the cock as I'm watching a Mariah May Anna Jay match was just all kinds of awesome. It just really enhanced the match that much more for me, your timing of saying that, Jake Digman. So very, very precious timing. Yes, precious timing on your part. I will just say the outcome of the Sami Zayn match surprised me, because as we said on the preview last week, you're kind of telling the same story both nights here. You know, conquering the unbeatable streak, et cetera, et cetera. Now, again, Sami Zayn had been Intercontinental Champion a couple times before, but was beating the unbeatable guy in Gunther. So, again, clearly they weren't afraid of having that happen, but it was an interesting choice nonetheless. And, again, Sami Zayn is somebody he can really get over in his role. I mean, I get why they're doing it here, but as you and I said when we recorded the preview last week, it was a chance to make Chad Gable to the level that Sami Zayn's already at, if they went that way.
I absolutely agree on that. It's really weird. I was watching this, and up until the moment, like the way they filmed the whole backstage thing with Sami walking through, I remember I looked over on Better Half, and I went, you know what? I kind of want Sami Zayn to win this. And she's like, because Gunther's like one of your favorites. Like, oh yeah, I know. And that's the beauty of something being a favorite of yours. When they're, you know, I don't know about you, but even when a favorite of mine loses, it's how they lose, and if they lose in the right way, it makes me even like them even more. And this was my favorite Gunther match I've seen. Not my famous Walter match, but my favorite Gunther match that I have seen, you know, thus far. And I just, the way the whole story from the very beginning of it, Sammy's entrance coming through, you know, seeing Jay and then seeing who was the other one? It was Kevin Owens. Oh, Chad Gable, and then seeing Kevin Owens and the little pep talk, and then coming out there, and then the whole story of, like, you know, him getting up, and then when he finally, that when he whipped out that El Generico brainbuster, something that would have never happened in previous times. It was like, that was one of those jump out of my chair moments. Like, oh crap! I'm like, he's gonna win. Like, you can't whip that out and then not win. Like, that's like a super move. You have to. He has to win now. And then when he won, I was just like, oh, bravo. Now, here's one of those things that makes me so glad we do not have Vince McMahon. Because the fact that Gunther lost on the 666th day of his reign, he would have had a satanic gimmick starting on Monday, and it would have been like, you know, he had achieved the mark of the beast, and he had the great number of Beelzebub, and you know darn well that I'm speaking truth here, that something stupid that Vince would have done. Just, you know, saw that app, pal, it'll be great. It'll be like, you know, Satan incarnate or some of the crap. And I'm like, and, you know, the guy behind the character going, I can't do that. So this will be nice, you know, get some time off, let Gunther go away for a little while, you know, maybe take a couple weeks off for figure out what's going on with him, and then hopefully by sometimes in the summer to late fall, we're talking about whatever brand he's on, we're talking about Gunther in that world title picture.
Yes, this is going to be akin to Bret Hart losing at SummerSlam 92 with the Intercontinental title. He was going to be moving up to the world title picture. Whether they knew it was going to be that quickly or not, I don't think they knew it as far back as London, because I think that came together pretty quickly. But that's the way they ended up going. Gunther lost this to get freed up for something bigger. They could have done a champion versus champion match when it was time for him to move up, but you didn't need to do that. You absolutely didn't need to do that. And why I didn't think it was going to be Sammy was that, what is it that everybody always says here, that you have the chance to make somebody with this, And Sami Zayn had already sort of been made a few times. Now, the fact, again, that he didn't win against Roman Reigns, was there the sense that, like, he could get to a certain level but not further? I don't know. And if so, but I think that's overthinking it because, you know, Sammy's a guy where, again, by the way, if you wanted to get him over to another level, you could actually let him win a world title one of these days. And we'll see if that's ever in the card. But, you know, this was a really good match. 4 stars. I thought it was the best match of night one, just ahead of the opener and just ahead of the finisher, which was The Rock and Roman Reigns against Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. 44 minutes and 35 seconds, one of the longest main event matches in WrestleMania history. And a lot of smoke and mirrors here. It was the sort of impromptu, no rules kind of a thing. I'm not a big fan of that, oh, there's an authority figure in a match, so it's going to kind of dictate whatever. Like, that was a little bit wrestle crappish to me, as opposed to kind of laying out ahead of time, you know, Philly Street Fight or whatever direction you wanted to go. But, again, I can't quibble with how it went. I'm going to say 3¾ stars. It was an excellent match. And, again, the smoke and mirrors worked. It was a thing where The Rock was able to get through it with whatever cardio he brought to bear here. And it was an excellent match. The finish sets up, obviously, a Rock and Cody Rhodes thing subsequently. Sort of Brett and Owen-ish from WrestleMania 10, the way that that went, where Brett had the 2 matches and the loss that he had set up another big match later on. So we'll see what comes out of this long term. But it set up, of course, the Bloodline Rules match on Sunday night and the Avengers Endgame stuff that we saw coming ahead of time. So I thought this match really served its purpose. I was impressed with it and thought it was very good. A little bit shy of the Sammy and Gunther match, I thought, but that's because that one was so epic.
Normally I'm on board with you, the whole idea of the authority figure, but for some reason I just absolutely dug it with the whole Final Boss character and what he's been doing. And it's so much better than, I like that they addressed how, why and how they were able to just go into the crowd. I mean, I know you didn't like the way they did it, as opposed to when they just do it and no one ever counts, and they're just like, oh, well, we understand they're going to give them lax rules in this. I kind of like that idea of, like, you know, stacking the deck and, like, you know, no one can get, you know, people having that fear of being fired for whatever it was. For just for the sake of this story, I like how they did that, and this tag match was very well done. I agree 100% with what you're saying. They did a great job of, you know, smoke and mirrors to hide, you know, Rock's cardio and what he could do and what he couldn't do. The whole he gave himself a belt thing is just instant heat. And I could have sworn at the Hall of Fame that Muhammad Ali's wife said, or widow said, that The Rock asked us to give him a belt. I'm not sure that's what he said, but I could have sworn. I'm just like, okay, whatever. You have a belt now, and you're coming out. That's fine. But as far as, like, you know, for the people that were, that's what they came to see. You know, they came to see, you know, dads who watched The Rock fight Stone Cold or back in the day are here to show their kids, hey, man, that's a real wrestler right there who you're seeing, whether it's true or not. You know, but that's just the beauty of it, because you know. Kind of is what it is. Could you imagine, by the way, on a sidebar, in the Attitude Era, if, you know, if we went with our dads and all of a sudden they brought out, like, I don't know, Bruno? It was like, that's the real man right there. What?
Yeah.
It have felt so flat, but because I think it's just because of the technology and the world we live in that all of the, like, that footage and everything is always at people's fingertips. So people have access to it. So, like, younger people can see that stuff. So it's like, now it doesn't seem as old as it really is. I mean, it's a whole other sidebar, but, like, you know, the Attitude Era does not feel like 25 years ago, but it very much is. But, like, you know, in 1998, if you would have said, like, you know, 20 years ago, 1978, they'd have been like, oh, God, that's like a lifetime. But it wasn't. So it's just, I think it's the way the world has changed as a result of, you know, it just doesn't have that same feeling to it. But as far as, like, you know, in this situation of using a part-time star to elevate. It's going to be interesting to see where we go from here, as you mentioned, because, of course, it was, and it had to be, Cody Rhodes taking the pinfall to The Rock. I thought it was going to be Roman Reigns who pinned him personally to set up for the night before, but nope, it was The Rock with the people's elbow to bring us into night number two. But that also leaves the door open now to a potential Rock versus Cody match down the line. But let's head to tonight too.
Well, there you go. I will say one last note on that with what you're talking about with the passage of time. And this is sort of a meta level observation that I have about society and the way that again things have kind of slowed down in terms of like when you watch. When Back to the Future came out, I mean, it was in the 80s. It was like, the 50s are so ancient ago. Like, it was like, you know, Dick Bockwinkel seemed particularly ancient because in the 80s, he was still wrapping up his career, but he had broken in, like, in the late 50s. And people really, I think, overly and unfortunately thought he was a relic in the mid to late 80s, even when he could still go. He's one of the greatest of all time, but because he dated back to the 50s. That seems really frickin' quaint because, like, we don't look at the 80s or even the 90s the way that those folks looked at the 50s. The 80s and the 90s are a lot more relatable, I think, not just to guys of our generation, but I think to everybody. Somewhere along the way, time slowed down because we got all these guys in there like The Rock from the 90s and everything like that, and nobody bats an eye at it. I talked last week on the preview about, you know, Sting coming back. This decade, and the Stone Cold Steve Austin, and all these things, Paul Ellering, which we'll be talking about, you know, on the next night here, being in somebody's corner at least. Like we don't think of time the way that we used to. You know, it's like somebody that was like big in 1997 and 98 and whatever, like The Rock. We don't think of that the same way. It feels natural for him to be in here. So it's just really interesting.
Thing with that too is that he's continuously been big and gotten bigger through other things, he being The Rock, through other outside activities, and his like through his aura, I guess, for lack of a better term, has just gotten so much bigger over time. Where, like, you know, again, everything is in your face. Everything is, we're an instant gratification society. It's like, you know, we were just talking about Rey Mysterio earlier. He's pretty much had a career the same length as Dick Bockwinkel, but you wouldn't think that, you know? The 50s or the 80s, oh my God, but he's been around for 30 years. He's been around longer. He started wrestling, he was, what, 14?
Probably it was early 90s down in Mexico.
Yeah, he was like 14 or 15 when he first started wrestling. So that dude has been wrestling professionally, and he's in his – I have to look it up. He's in his early 50s, I want to say. So just do the math there. That's a 35-year run already, pretty much. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. And, like, and again, this isn't just wrestling. This is all aspects of society. This is other sports. In the 80s, it would have been like, George Mikan? Oh, my God, that was decades and decades ago. Mickey Mantle? Eh. And it's like, we don't look at Bird and Magic and Jordan that way. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, we don't look at anything the way, I mean, and this would be an interesting podcast unto itself, the way that time has kind of slowed down as far as how we look at these guys, and that's what's allowed these wrestlers to have the longer careers and be able to come back, because we don't look at them. You don't have the stink of time on you the way that you used to. Now, part of it is from being part-time and making special appearances. Nick Bockwinkel was there night in, night out in the AWA at that point in time. So it's not exactly the same thing. But night two, as you were saying here, as we move to it, I said at the top of the show, and I cannot put this over absolutely enough, you called pretty much the sequence of events of how this went. First and foremost, the night starts with a banged-up Seth Rollins, both in kayfabe and not, because he was carrying injuries into WrestleMania, but he had the long match the night before. The interesting thing is when you talk about how banged up he is, you know, less kayfabe than not, actually. That was actually one of these rare shoots is how beat up he was. But Drew McIntyre beats him in 10 minutes, 30 seconds. Again, gave him the big kick right off the bat there. There were some false finishes as far as being able to put Seth Rollins away, but in the end, the totality of it put him down for the count. As you predicted, he starts taunting CM Punk, who was doing the commentary over there, and as he was standing up on there, I had the sense, because there was only one way it could go. If an injured CM Punk was going to do anything, I was like, he's got to sweep the leg. Well, that's exactly what happens. sweep the leg. He falls down off of the table. Punk takes the arm brace off, clobbers him with it, grins when he sees Damian Priest come running out. Damian Priest grabs the briefcase, clobbers McIntyre with it, cashes it in, hits him with the finisher in the ring, 9 seconds, and takes the world title. And again, one of those things where you might as well go this way. It's better. It's certainly better than assuming that Damian Priest is a dud and should never cash the thing in. I'm a big believer in being, you know, as a regular Texas Hold'em player, I'm a big believer in being pot committed here. You gave this guy money in the bank. Was it the right move? I don't know, but better than having him, you know, fart out, you know, with a non-finish here, non-successful cash in. You had to do something like this. It gives McIntyre, you know, the motivation to stay in his present character of being pissed off and having something to prove to the world. It was very well done all the way around. And again, let us say this for the record, in case there's any old time, you know, people who go way back with us to the STN days here. Let me just say for the record, and it was alluded to before with the little guy, you and I don't talk shop. We would never say anything on this show. Nobody inside told you anything because you and I would never ask those questions, and I don't think we'd get the answers even if we did. You did this all on your own, bro. How do you?
First thing I want to say revolving this, absolutely perfect booking. I couldn't have done it better myself.
You're entitled to that. You are entitled
absolutely
to that.
Absolutely. And then after, once I explained it to you, and then you saw the whole thing play out before your eyes, you're just like, wow, this actually makes perfect sense. And it did. So it got that magic moment, making McIntyre even bigger coming out of it. He didn't need the belt. You know, it's one of those things. The moment itself is what makes him bigger. Now, to address the other thing you just brought up, if the listeners knew the actual thing I pitched to our little friend, they'd be quite surprised. So believe me, I have never... once ever before an event, or even really after an event, very, very, I've never talked shop. I've talked some things about stuff, but not like in the present as it's happening.
Sure.
I'm talking
you
about
would
a
never
couple
put
things.
Him in that spot.
Right. I just, and you know, quite frankly, I'm not one of those people. I don't, you know, I respect what they do, what he does, way too much to ever be, you know, put in a situation like that. No, I had no insider knowledge on this. I didn't ask.
Yeah,
and
I
if I did, because I could see some people saying, oh, well, you just, you know, you asked your buddy, all right? I'm like, I'm going to be real, all right? We can shoot on this show, right? We can be real. Let's break the fourth wall. If I were to do anything to ask our mutual friend anything, my happy ass would be going on, one of those bet places. That's where I would go. And I don't.
Yeah.
Because I'm never going to put someone in that situation. But, like, you know, what am I thinking of? What is the one you can bet on it? DraftKings. That's the one I'm thinking
yes.
of. Yeah. Where they put the odds out there. That's where
That's
I would
true.
Go. But I'm not, because I'm
right.
not. And
right.
I also, you know, if I you know, I have a friend of mine from, well, not really friends, closest friends is our mutual friend, but, you know, I have people in, like, I know that work in, like, the film industry. I know somebody who I know the person who was the stunt coordinator who was in charge of all the stunts for all of the Marvel movies. I'm not going to send him a message on Facebook and go, hey, dude, how does Endgame end? I don't want to know.
Right,
I don't want to
right.
know that. You know, it's
right.
part of the fun. It's part of, like, it's one of these things that I'm a little side tangent here. Pro wrestling
yeah.
is the absolute worst, and I've been guilty of this. We all have, where it's like I want to know what's going to happen before it does, so I can make myself feel smart about it. I don't
right.
under. When I was younger, I was like, you know, oh, I want to read the spoiler so I know what's going to happen. I would be that guy who would go to a house show and be like, well, he's going to win. It happened last night in this town. Now as an adult,
yeah.
I don't want to do that. It doesn't make me come across like I'm smart. It makes me come across like I'm just ruining it. And yeah,
right.
so I've right. never been in a situation or a spot like that. Nor yep, no inside tracks on this. That was just my own, just looking where the story was going and what would make the absolute perfect sense. Because going back to the Royal Rumble with Brock Lesnar in it. I believe Damian Priest cashing in was always going to be the finish on this. I believe it was always going to be the finish on it. I believe the original plan was, and again, no one's told me this, just my own hunch, was based on the whole, when it was going to be Punk versus Rollins and doing the whole take on the, because Rollins did the cash in the height of the century, so for someone to do that to him in his moment, and then set up a few, because Rollins was leaving no matter what after Mania, am I correct on this assessment? Yeah. That he was planning on leaving. So then, you know, basically Punk would have that moment, and then he would have cashed in on Punk, and that was your feud coming out of it. But now as a result of it, you know, we have because Punk got injured and they had to do the audible, and it worked out so much better with the whole thing with Drew McIntyre and everything it had done to build to that moment. I think, you know, that was a Punk getting injured here was a blessing in disguise, in my opinion. I just think the story, though, it's the way it played out, and everything's played out much better than what the original idea would have, what I believe what it would have been. So
it may have played out better. Yeah.
Two things coming out of this. Number one, every once in a while, a blind squirrel finds a nut. And number two, just, you know, enjoy it. You don't always have to know everything that's going to happen, because if you know everything that's going to happen, it kind of takes the fun out of it. And what's the point? It's like watching a sports game and you already know the ending.
Well, exactly. And that's where, again, I mentioned it because, you know, for any of the handful of people that really know our backstory and would be, you know, through the looking glass with us, I didn't want there to be any suspicion whatsoever that anybody tipped you off to this. Because first and foremost, again, that would make
us bad. Jason Jones already posted about it.
Yeah, that would make us bad people, because we should never put our friend in that position, and that's not us.
Yeah.
But you deserve the credit. You didn't go ask anybody on the inside. You figured this out yourself. You did a tremendous job of it. The Rollins and Drew match, I gave it 3.5 stars. I thought it was very good for what was not a long, you know, world title match, but they did a very good job with it and told a very good story, and then ended up in a good place in the aftermath.
Five stars for the finishing sequence, the execution, so the whole thing played out. 5 stars. As I said, I couldn't have written it better myself.
Another thing that I'll say is, because CM Punk's, you know, real life sort of, you know, monomaniacal, however you pronounce that, at this time of night as we're recording this. But his whole thing, again, he was such a mark for, I just want a main event WrestleMania. So had he main evented a night of WrestleMania, that would have been the real motivation right there. That would have, there wouldn't even have necessarily been as much heat in him losing the world title on cash-in because, okay, well, he proved he could win the WWE title again. And, you know, he main evented WrestleMania. So, you know, there wouldn't even have been as much heat if this happened to him, because he wasn't setting up being the champion as that. It was to be a main eventer.
He didn't want to win. He just wanted to be there.
Yeah, well, and not only that, really, really funny in terms of when it comes down to what he said to MJF about, you just want to be, you know, able to, you know, main event one night of a buy three, get one free, whatever. So CM Punk, at this point, would have regarded a Saturday night main event as still being a WrestleMania main event, even though we truly know that the Sunday night one is. So CM Punk moving the goalposts yet again, as he does with everything else. But anyways, I agree with you. It turned out better for the way that it was with his injury. The next match, it was Pride Night in Philly, as the Pride takes on the Final Testament, 8:35 in a Philadelphia street fight. But speaking of people who like to make things about themselves, Bubba Ray Dudley coming out there and being special referee for this match. We got to see, as I said, the all-time odd combo of, I can't believe I'm saying these names in the same sentence, Scarlett and Paul Ellering in the corner of the Final Testament. A match that I gave 2.5 stars. Like, it was what it was. It did have some swank-ass moves. I was afraid Montez Ford killed himself on that one, you know, flying move outside the ring. And, I don't know what else you can say about it. It was what it was. And, you know, it told the story it told, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, so one thing coming out of this, first of all, I am about to send you a meme that was sent to me that I'm texting to you right now, live on the air, if you have your phone in front of you, to get this. Because this is my only take coming out of this match, mostly because I was watching Nights 1 and Night 2 on the same day because I had the event on Saturday night. At this point, I was tuned out. I kind of knew what I was going to get on this one. There you go.
That is amazing.
I see you got it. I see you got it. Good. And you know, we'll just let the audience wonder what that is, what we're laughing at. But yeah, I saw that. It was we'll give him a little hint here. It was good to see Bubba in Philly. I don't know. So, you know, it's always good to get a little ECW homecoming. It's like, you know, if you're going to do it, if there's one time where it's like, okay, you have nothing to lose here, do it. And I criticize, you know, because, you know, I criticize, you know, Moxley at AEW because every match he's like, I'm going to bring out thumbtacks and barbed wire and bleed all over the place. You're in Philly. You've got – one of the Dudleys is your referee. Hell, I would have had, like, you know, go all in ECW on this. Just do it. Go all the way. If you're going to do it, do it. Have the guys come out, like, you know, in their, you know, ECW garb, ready to fight. Hell, I mean, they probably couldn't play New Jack theme over the crowd. I know we're not in Vince land, but still. Something like that. Anything. But also, if you do that, then I can see why they didn't do that, as I'm thinking about this in real time, because then that would look like they were ripping off Anarchy in the Arena. Because don't they do that in Anarchy in the Arena? They play the music the whole time? I remember one of those AEW shows. They kept playing, and it was it was a wild thing, and it wouldn't shut up. I'm like, okay, right. I like the song, but Natural Born Killers, this is not, you know. But it's like, if you're going to do it, do it. It just felt like, you know, the watered-down sports entertainment-ish crap that they always do with something that makes no sense with the kendo sticks and the trash can lids, and it's just the same old crap.
Right, played out.
Do the actual thing. You could have done an homage to so many different things. You could have fought to the freaking, you know, had two guys get to the bathroom. The homage to the WCW Benoit Sullivan. Of course, you know, we can't mention that. Someone go fight out into out in the concession stand. Anything. This was like, I don't even remember. I mean, it just was there. It was there. It was,
well,
you know.
Yeah.
I can honestly tell you, and this is going to be terrible for the review, because again, the day had been going on here. I don't remember anything about this match other than the meme that I sent to you, which is sad. But I kind of expected that coming out. I kind of expected that coming out of this. I got as much out of this as, you know, was built up putting into it. And apparently now the final testament, as I understand it, has been demoted to Tuesdays. So let's see what happens there.
Okay. We'll see how that goes. And long-term storytelling, at the very least, with Bubba Ray Dudley, his years of taking cheap shots at Tony Khan and sucking the crank of the Fed, well, he got his payoff here, didn't he? So long-term storytelling, folks. The next one up here... LA Knight defeated AJ Styles by pinfall, 12:25. This is a match that I gave it 3.25 stars, which is certainly on the lower end of anything that I've given an AJ Styles match at WrestleMania. And it's one of those things where, again, you talked about it before with Rhea and Becky and feeling that it never quite hit that gear. I mean, this match was, you know, perfectly cromulent, I would say. But again, my expectations for an AJ Styles match are higher than this. Now, again, he'd been off for a good period of time, or on and off, I guess, the last couple of months, but he'd been coming off of a layoff. I saw that he recently did an interview where he said he's really getting older. He's getting the aches and pains. He's already kind of seeing the end of the road, whatever. So, for somebody that I think is one of the greatest wrestlers in the 21st century, I don't want to harp on that part of it too much, but I think that this is indication that all of the city miles that he has put up entertaining us over the years and all the places that he's been, I think that basically kind of limited what this match could have been. The right guy went over in terms of LA Knight being a guy for the future, but again, I look wistfully with AJ Styles at some of the things that Bryan Danielson is able to do in AEW right now on his farewell tour, but I'm also starting to wonder, too, if AJ Styles would be at a point where he'd be able to fully exploit it the way that Brian Danielson has been in terms of the respective health of both of their bodies.
Yeah, I agree with you. Father Time catches up to us all, as is the truth in life. And
right.
This was a perfectly acceptable wrestling match. It reminded me of a match you'd see as on a Monday Night Raw or SmackDown.
Yeah,
it's nowhere near to the level of what we've seen from AJ Styles in the past. Again, it is what it is. You can't help but wonder, because sometimes, a change of scenery, a fresh coat of paint, as that saying goes, gives you it does something good for you. And, it'd be intriguing to see what maybe one final run outside the Fed for an AJ Styles, to have that last hurrah, I guess. But also, I'm pretty sure he's getting paid a lot of money and spending time with his wife and kids. So we shall see on that one. But I think over the course of the night, if he's not already there, really, if you think about it, but I think more and more AJ Styles is very much going to be right before our eyes, has become a special attraction performer.
Yeah, and that might be for the best, because maybe it helps you get closer to 4 stars in the matches that he's going to have. And I want to say also, too, that it's a thing where I didn't see any botched moves from him. This was not Willie Mays falling down in the outfield. But it's a thing where, and it's a subtle kind of a thing, but you know what I'm talking about. When you're wrestling a match where you're not going to botch any moves because you're not quite taking the chances to where you are going to botch it. Again, it was fine. It was just, not at the level of what I expect from an AJ Styles match. And similar to what I said about Samantha Irwin previously, I don't feel good saying that out loud, because the man has given his body to all of us, all the hours and hours and hours of entertainment over the years, and he's got the aches and pains and whatever. But I'm just telling you what I see, that it was like,
and
I expect a show stealer, and this wasn't it.
Right, and now that you've got me thinking about it, I think, because that's just where we are, when we think of AJ Styles, when I think of AJ Styles, I immediately go back to, even if you weren't there, in my mind, you were there, we were watching that Unbreakable 3-way together, even if we weren't, but in my brain we were, Mandela Effect, I don't know actually where it was when I watched it, but that gives, that mentality of that, even in his WWE run, we commented on the pre-show that AJ Styles got a 4-star match out of Shane McMahon, which is just
yes,
that was the last time that happened.
Yeah.
Since then, it has been all, you can't say disappointment, but I'll say disappointment, because maybe the expectations were just so, the expectations for Nakamura and Styles at WrestleMania was so high, I was never going to achieve that. But
they still booked him like crap.
They still booked him like crap, and then coming out on the other side, I don't even know what he did at 35, which is sad. And I was there live, and I don't know what AJ Styles did at WrestleMania 35. I know that the Edge match after that, what was that, 37 or 38? That one was not good. Everyone had their sights set up very high on that, had high expectations for, those two facing each other for the first time, and it was what it was, and it was the catalyst for ill-conceived Edge heel turn, which no one wanted. I mean, the only thing good to come out of that is we got Mommy in the Judgment Day, but nobody was asking for that, especially at that stage of his career. And unfortunately, I just think we're kind of, without realizing it, we've kind of watched AJ Styles going down the other side of the hill on his career right before our eyes. And I didn't put two. He's just always one of those guys. Well, you got to get AJ Styles in there. Can you get a match? He's going to have a banger of a match. But now it's like, do you really have to get him in there? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, and I hate to say that because he's one of my favorite performers of all time, but,
I know.
Again, Father Time, man, it's undefeated.
Yeah. What you're saying really depresses me even more, but I can't argue with it. So,
and here's the other thing, too. 36 was the Boneyard match with The Undertaker. Just imagine if that would have happened in, real time, if we didn't have the lockdown. That could have been a disaster.
Oh, very much so. No, you're right about that. It could have been. And That was a match that was perfectly of its time because it was a little bit easier to pull together because of the pandemic.
Right. I love how everyone talks about that match. It's a movie. Nobody
well,
won.
Right.
Pinfall. It wasn't a match. Everyone's like, that was The Undertaker's final match. I'm like, that was The Undertaker's final vignette. That wasn't a match. You can't. At least the other one, the Firefly Funhouse, had a pin. That one didn't even have a pin. He just left.
You know, and you're going to tell me that Bray Wyatt and John Cena wasn't a match. I remember, you know, such an exchange of holds and all those kinds of things here. Don't tell me that wasn't
a match. At least it ended in a – at least that one ended in a pin.
Yeah.
The Boneyard match just ended with The Undertaker leaving. And it was like, okay, so is it like a count out? What happened here? Is there how does one win this? And like it's one of those things that, you know, retroactively they talk about. And they're like, oh, and it's final match against AJ Styles. And I'm like, to make you believe that's what you saw, but I'm like, okay. And the unsung heroes of that whole performance, by the way, were Gallows and Anderson.
Right. Who got cut shortly thereafter, I believe.
Yeah, whose reward was for main eventing a night of WrestleMania was to get fired.
So, yeah, that happened. But, hey, they're back now, but they're not – I don't think they're associated with AJ Styles anymore, whatever. Those guys really aren't worth a whole lot as a, you know, deal unless they are affiliated with anybody with Bullet Club, you know, kind of ties. But that's another story for another day. You really depressed me by making your valid and accurate points about AJ Styles, which sets the stage perfectly for the outcome of the next match. I'm already on record with what I think about Logan Paul, even as I admit reluctantly that the guy, again, has the moves down and the wrestling heel persona and whatever. People could say that I'm, you know, working myself into a shoot for as much as I loathe watching the guy, but Logan Paul successfully defends the United States Championship in 1740 against Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. It says on Wikipedia, with eye show speed, whoever that is, I'm going to paint myself, unwittingly here as being an old guy.
You're not alone, buddy.
Don't care. Some douche in a costume here.
Funny thing on this, okay? So my buddies from my wrestling group chat that you have met were watching. One of them was watching it with his nephew, who's like, I want to say 12, and a couple of his friends. They all know who Eyeshow Speed was. They're like, how do you know who she is? Oh my God, he's on YouTube. And he just looked at me and goes, why do I know? Yuri said to me, he goes, how do I not know who this person is? I go, because we're not the target audience.
No, we're not. And that's, again, Logan Paul, I just see, you know, Logan Paul, R-Truth, and a handful of others just underline to me that I'm not the target audience at the end of the day for what their product is. And again, U.S. champion, he goes over, decent enough match. I mean, I give it 3 2/4 stars as I gave the match previous. But I will say this, him being the U.S. champion, again, they have a draft coming up here, so you don't know who's going to be on what show necessarily. My guess is that Cody and the Bloodline and all that stuff gets moved to Monday Night Raw in preparation for, again, we've seen the last couple of years, SmackDown's been the A show on Fox, but the A show, when they move to Netflix, is going to be Raw. So I don't know who's going to be on what show. But if Logan Paul still is United States champion on the same show with Cody Rhodes, Logan Paul, at the very least, you talked about this before, Cleveland Stadium, main event SummerSlam, if it's champion versus champion, that might give it the juice. We've already seen Logan Paul go down at the hands of Roman Reigns, so it's not a fresh thing having him go for the world title. Champion versus champion could be plausible, especially in Logan Paul's hometown. It'd be funny to see him get booed out of the place in Cleveland, which he no doubt will.
Yeah, he'll do a really good job of that, like, you know, getting booed. I am intrigued to see if, like, I did mention that I could see them very much doing a Cody versus Logan Paul because they think that's, like, a huge thing there. But also, like, you know, we'll see if it truly is a new era if, you know, I don't know. But we shall see. We shall see. That's the only thing I can say on that.
And I mean, for a match that, again, was a glorified energy drink advertisement, basically, from the stupid mascot all the way down to the endless mentions of the product and everything like that, that Logan Paul, at the end of the day, is not so much a member of the roster, but somebody that is in business with the company, first and foremost. So it's part of their new kind of TKO deal.
He's going to be around for a while, kind of like, you know, by the way, go right back to the last match for 1 second. When are they just going to start announcing him as LA Knight presented by Slim Jims? Because they really should.
Yes. Well, not only that, nice little bit of grave digging, having the, you know, the Macho Man Randy Savage voice in the Slim Jim ads. I mean, did anybody from the Poffo family sign off on that? I mean,
no, they're all dead.
Oh, harsh but true. Yeah, I guess who's going to sue them is a real grim way of looking at it, but I guess that's
true. That's why you'll never see Elizabeth get an induction in the Hall of Fame. There's no one to get it. Other than her being added in as like one of those like illuminator, like, you know, like what do they call them? Like they're honorary inductees or something.
Legacy inductees.
It's the only thing they can do. She doesn't have a family. She had no siblings, as I understand it. Her parents are dead. So there's no one to accept her.
Widow's still alive, right? I mean, theoretically, she could sue them into oblivion.
I guess she could, yes. I mean, someone has to be signing off these rights deals. I know Mattel lost the rights to the Randy Savage likeness, and it went to a couple of these independent toy makers that have couple of them popping up for the Macho Man. So I know someone is doing deals. Somebody out there owns the rights. I mean, someone's getting that Macho Man Slim Jim money. They ain't doing it for free. So it's Slim Jim that's doing it, not WWE. It just happens to be on WWE programming, but like you go to the stores, you see Macho Man, he's everywhere still. So someone's someone's getting paid off that.
Well, I will say, egging on somebody from the Randy Savage estate to sue anybody wasn't necessarily anything I had on my 2024 bingo card, but here we are. So we go to the next match here. Singles match for the WWE Women's Championship. The winner of the Royal Rumble, Bayley. Theoretically in a WrestleMania main event, right? No, she's in the cooldown match on Sunday night, wrestles Io Sky and wins by pinfall, 3.5 stars. I thought it was a good match. I don't regard either one of them, the S tier, as the kids would say, of women's workers, like I mentioned from the previous match. But, probably on the second tier historically in the company, and that still says a lot. They're both really good. And they brought it here. It was very, very interesting that, like, Bayley with her whole ring entrance here, like, the announcers were having to kind of explain away, you know, as far as, like, what that was. And, like, oh, there's, like, this park in San Jose, and it's representative of this now. And that's one of these things where Vince was probably sitting at home feeling vindicated, because his entire thing, the way that I sum up Vince McMahon's approach to promoting more than anything was, back in the days of the Attitude Era, when they ran that commercial during the Super Bowl, and Vince goes, "Get it!" He probably said that 56 times an hour to everybody he met, okay? Everything's got to be so dumbed down, so lowest common denominator. He probably sat at home and felt vindicated. That never would have happened when I was there, pal! We would have had it completely explained until people's ears were bleeding. So, yeah, probably a rare moment of vindication for Vince on that really weird entrance that they struggled to, explain away.
Yeah, I didn't get it, but you know what? I just thought it looked cool for what it was. I didn't get it, but I thought, you know what, it looked cool. They had to do something to differentiate, to make Bayley feel somewhat special, because she hadn't been going into this and changing up her whole look, and then the crowd doing for the longest time, I found that song to be so annoying, especially when they went over to the UK and they just would nonstop just sing the song. You know the one I'm talking about, the Bayley song.
Yeah.
They just would sing it through the matches, and I'm just like, okay, stop. You talk about, like, you know, there was a point in time with audiences where I was like, oh my God, this is so cool, and then it became grating, and it's just like, and then it became, hey, we're just trying to get ourselves over kind of thing. It's like, but I guess it was kind of fitting in the, you know, being in Philadelphia where ECW was from, and that was like, you know, the entire audience was a part of the show that we've been suffering for ever since then, to a certain degree, one form or another. Back then it was like something fresh. This time, I didn't find the song annoying. I was actually kind of happy to hear it because it meant that they were at least somewhat behind Bayley. And again, this was a perfectly acceptable wrestling match for what it was. It would have been so much better if there was more Dakota Kai at ringside. I do have to point that out. But the right person went over, and you know they did enough tweaks and change. And I'm glad that they didn't revert back to like her being a hugger. I could see them tying that in somehow, as I mentioned in our preview, but I didn't want it to like revert back to, okay, I'm this happy-go-lucky person again. They didn't do that. They kind of continued evolving forward, being like, you know, yeah, I was a bitch before that, but she's worse kind of thing. And it'll just be intrigued to see how they handle this going forward with Bailey, what they're going to do and where we go from here, because they're so – I don't know. Like, I don't see her as a long-term champion with all the no. – I mean, maybe after the draft and some, like, shuffles and some stuff gets changed around a little bit perhaps, but, you know, does she match up against Rhea Ripley? No, not at all. And you got to know eventually they're going to get that belt back on either a Bianca Belair or, dare I even say, a Jade Cargill at some point. And just to see – it's just going to be intriguing to see – where they go from here with this. And her first run as the heel champion, she was, dare I say, the savior of the company during the entire lockdown era. Her and Sasha Banks were the best things to watch on the entire show, despite the fact that WWE tried to do revisionist history and say that it was Drew McIntyre. It most certainly was
right.
not. It was Bayley.
Right.
It was Bayley and Sasha and the work that they were doing in that empty arena and her, you know, once they got into the Thunderdome and the way she was working off of everybody. So good for her to get a moment now in front of, you know, fans like this. And I wish her the best. I don't know. We'll see. Well, I'm intrigued to see where this plays out.
Something I'm going to go real wrestling nerd on you here for characters and stuff in terms of they're going to have their work cut out for her defining her as a babyface champion because they haven't defined her yet because Bayley right now, Bayley is a foil. And when that's happened before, it hasn't gone so well. Like, for example, Randy Orton, when he first turned in 04, he existed as someone who was in opposition to Evolution. And that was about it, pretty much. And that's where, again, she's going to be getting away from them at some point. I joked with you before about Dollar Store, you know, Hogan and Heenan family, of where she'll probably run through, you know, all of Damage Control at some point here. But there's got to be a feud after that. And what is Bayley's character past that? They have to be able to define it here. So, again, is it, you know, the sort of grown-up version of the hugger or something like that? But, you know, Michael Cole even mentioned during the match something like that. He went back to some of the antagonism that, you know, his character had with her character, you know. So, I mean, she wasn't always my favorite person. So it was good. It was a nod to what had happened. Also underlines what you're talking about here, the challenge going forward, because you can't just have someone existing in opposition to someone else. They have to develop their own identity. And what's her grown-up babyface identity going to be? That is completely in the air at this point, and that is something that should be worrisome to them because, you know, unless they just don't think she has that high of a ceiling at this point, and it was just like, you know, maybe they'd look at it like, hey, Rick, we saw this as a way to finish this story arc. She gets a baby face run out of it on top here, but we're not really worried about what comes next because we see other people as being more important. How they book her, Jake, if they don't get her fleshed out, it'll be interesting to see if it looks like they even tried or if they just decided, who cares, we were going for the moment at WrestleMania 40 and whatever comes after that comes after that.
Yeah. It's going to be, you know, this is a pivotal point for to see, you know, what the future holds for Bayley. And like I said, I don't know, just based on everything, you hit the nail on the head. It's like they have to stand
Thank
for
you.
Something and not be standing against somebody. You know,
right.
I absolutely agree with that. And once they run out of who they're standing against, it's like, you know, to do the comparison, you know, back in the day, it's like, you know, Sting against the Horseman. As soon as he wasn't facing the Horseman, did the crowd really care as much? You
right.
know? It's one of those things, and we've seen that over and over and over again, where it's, you know, they've got to be able to, you know, move forward to the next, to the next, to the next. It's the mark of a great champion, and I just, I don't know. I've been proven
yeah.
wrong, but I just think they've got their eyes earmarked on way too many other new talent that is involved with it that they're trying to build up. So
right.
we shall see. But regardless, congratulations to Bayley, and, you know, good for her getting her first one-on-one WrestleMania match and leaving as a champion.
Yes, it worked out well for her. And again, you know, it went about as well as it was going to go, I would say. Main event, Cody Rhodes defeating Roman Reigns by pinfall in the Bloodline Rules match 33-25. And it was a match that, again, I think – whether or not it made sense under the whole storyline, I think the match was better for it. But starting off as being just a one-on-one match and not just a shite show from the outset with nothing but constant interference and everything like that, they built towards it. And it felt like an earned kind of a story the way that it went. The aforementioned interference with Jimmy Uso and then Jey Uso. Solo Sikoa coming out and giving the real sense of, again, here we go again from last year. And I think kind of, you know, acknowledging that, you know, the finish last year was definitely something the fans found unsatisfactory. By the way, I will say a little bit too, a little bit of retconning that has happened in the build-up to WrestleMania this year, because the way that Cody got screwed last year, Cody in the immediate aftermath of it, they had him do this because it was a year out. Well, you know, I lost. The only thing that matters is that I lost. Versus you start coming up on this year's WrestleMania and he starts saying the truth. I got cheated. Shades of John Cena, the way they retconned him, because they remember it was going to be a year between the matches with The Rock. So he loses to The Rock at WrestleMania in 2012 and goes out. And remember, me and you were pissed about this. They sacrificed Brock Lesnar to him the next month to get his seat
back.
So dumb. And he did that. And, like, and John Cena wins the championship again that year and whatever. And you get to the next year with The Rock, and he's retconned it. I had the worst year of my life because of you. I didn't do crap. I got divorced. When they do these,
the worst year of his life. The worst year of his life, and he main evented every single pay per view, despite not being the champion.
he had the being John Cena title. Actually, and I imagine it wrong. He didn't win the title back. That is true. He did not. The CM Punk had it the whole time. But everything else
right.
I said was right.
Didn't matter though. It was a mid card title at that point.
But it's one of these things where, when you have a year-long build for something, what you have to do on a day-to-day basis is different than what you have to do in the lead-up to the next year's match, because we couldn't have had a whole year of John Cena running around looking like a homeless person that is depressed and despondent. He had to go out there and be himself for the next year because, again, the kiddies needed their hero to bounce back and everything like that. But you needed at the next year John Cena to have that chip on his shoulder about having lost the match. All of a sudden, it mattered again. And Cody Rhodes telling the truth recently about how he got screwed last year by the finish of it, it did make it mean more when Solo Sikoa came out. And, again, a little bit of finisher spamming there. Cody gets spiked a couple times, one time a spike and a spear, kicks out of that. So there was a little bit of Super Cena for Cody before the shenanigans started happening, but the whole range of things there at the end, the whole Avengers Endgame, we had kind of called it with Cena that he would probably be out there. It was a logical tie-in to the Solo Sikoa thing and getting squashed in Saudi Arabia. So you had the tie-in with that. We didn't know who else it was going to be. There was thoughts that it could be Stone Cold. Evidently, I don't know if that didn't work for me, brother, or whatever it was, but it ended up being The Undertaker instead. I don't think anybody was complaining, because it was at least somebody that magnitude. And I will tell you, the whole thing, I'm calling conspiracy theory here, because the whole thing where when they played the Shield music, they didn't show you for the longest time who it was, this whole thing, they wanted us to think, oh, my God, Dean Ambrose has come back.
I'll be honest, this is the part of makes me still a fan to this day. When that music hit, and I knew it wasn't true. But for half a second, I'm going, are we going to see John Moxley in this crowd right now? Not saying he'd have to get involved, but if he's just in the crowd with, you know, flips off the, like, a hoodie on or something, and it's just like, half a second, I believed that we might see him. I never thought we'd see him in the ring, but I thought we might have seen him in the crowd, and then it didn't matter because then, the rest of the events played out as they did, and I do want to touch on who I believe the entire MVP of this entire night two was, that being Seth freaking Rollins. I developed a huge amount of respect for him coming out on the other side of this with his involvement and the way his story tied directly into the finish of this match. But, yeah, for that second, I'm with you, though. Yeah, they trolled us, but they trolled us in a good way, I felt. Because if you watch videos of people
time.
Who are there, people have posted videos of them live at WrestleMania going, oh, my God, is John Moxley here? And they all say John Moxley and not Dean Ambrose, which I think is cool.
Awesome, by the way. But, yeah, it was they didn't show for the longest time who it was. It was Seth Rollins who came out in the Shield vest and had the old-school skunk hair like he used to have back in the day. And it's a thing where, and I've seen this, where there's been the whole thing here, and this is the tie-in to the way that the night started and the way that the night ended, because it was the theme of an obsessive grudge because Drew McIntyre, I will say too, they've never, this whole quote unquote grudge against CM Punk does feel somewhat contrived. Because again, there's so many real life things that we come to find out as like people who hated him and everything like that. And, but they never even feuded in storyline nor apparently behind the scenes, but they've established this story, you know, however plausible it is that, you know, he hates and resents CM Punk. Okay. Well, the obsession cost him. And I know what you're going to say about this, because the obsession cost Roman Reigns, because he could have used the chair on Cody. He goes to use it on Rollins. It's the fatal distraction, and Cody is able to win the match. So there was that kind of a theme. I don't know that WWE was trying to tie it into both matches, but they definitely, and this will come out, because there will be matches in the future between Reigns and Rollins. You know, there's more to come with that. They were establishing this. And that's what it's going to be. It's going to be, and remember, and the promos of where Rollins was saying to Cody, I will be your shield. Well, he certainly was in that moment there. He took the shot for him. Quite literally was his shield.
And I got to give props to, like, the WWE on the way that, like, you know, the way they, you know, they showed, you know, the end of the guys involved with it too, with Rollins getting up and him standing up and Cody at the same time, and you saw the look where they got that look on Roman's face to get that. Even if you knew, you knew right then and there what it was. And there's a ton of people online that have broken down like this, just the pure masterpiece of that, where it was Roman's own obsession, and to the point where it's even people brought it all the way back to that being the moment that was the catalyst for why Roman Reigns became the tribal chief, because his brother that he believed in so much turned on him, and why he is the harshest to his family as opposed to everybody else, and why he doesn't let people get too close because he's been betrayed in the past. Now, do I think that's all true? No, because WWE was booked on the fly. However, it fits a great little narrative if you're telling a story to wrap it up in a nice little bow, which the bow being, you know, it was time for a changing of the guard. And the look of one of my other favorite things coming out of this was the pictures I've done of Roman Reigns with a subtle smile on his face as he's getting pinned for the 1-2-3, knowing that he was in what was a magical moment going forward. Now, the fan in me, I miss our tribal chief already. It feels like it's been 1,316 days since he's had the belt, and I just don't know what it's like living in this new weird era where, like, I was really hoping that, you know, that the final boss was going to come out on Monday and strip Cody of the belt a la Dusty finish because, you know, people interfered on his behalf and that wasn't allowed. But that didn't happen. I kid. That was a joke.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to say, that makes one of us on missing the Roman Reigns title ring. I will say, too, you go back to Royal Rumble 22, of where they had, you know, Seth Rollins doing the mind games of coming out in the Shield outfit there and all the Shield type things to provoke Roman and getting a rare W over him during that title reign of where he won by DQ because Roman was choking him in the ropes and wouldn't let go. Now, having said that, the stink bomb I'm going to throw in this whole continuity thing is that the WWE, of course, 2017, 2018, 2019 couldn't resist getting into the old Shield reunion game. So this whole thing, and that the Shield, when they broke up the second time, did so amicably and off-screen because Dean Ambrose left to become what he was always meant to be, the better version, Jon Moxley. And you really didn't have anything. You know, you had weren't they on different shows from there on in? You know, Rollins and Reigns, they haven't really been in the same place in the same time.
They were on different shows when they faced each other for that Royal Rumble match. Because whoever Reigns was supposed to face got hurt or something. Something happened. Whoever's opponent was supposed to be, that match couldn't happen. So they shoehorned Rollins in there like 2 weeks out or something. As just kind of
that was.
Yeah. You know, just as a means to an end there. But, you know, at the end of the I agree with you, you know. I mean, long-term story that's full of complete continuity all the way through has never been the WWE strong suit, especially with, you know, people flipping sides here and yonder. However, for what they were trying to get at in this moment, it fit. And coming out of it, it fit that. And the thing that I like that it was The Undertaker and not a Steve Austin, is Steve Austin would have made the spotlight all on him, with it being Undertaker, Undertaker showed up, did his thing, and was gone. And for years, the Undertaker was like the locker room leader and like the symbol of, like, you know, synonymous with WrestleMania. So for somebody that wanted to, like, you know, I guess protect the sanctity of what it is, it would make sense that the conscience of the WWE would be the one to stop the final boss. No arguments there, no problems. I don't know. His attire of choice, you know, I probably would have done a little bit better on, but hey, it's what it is. You know.
Yeah, but look, they were trying to get him out there probably as incognito as possible.
Right, so yeah, he got out there in a huge stadium, did that moment, and then, you know, when the I can pretty much call it like the multiple crossroads and that 1-2-3, you don't get a lot of them, but you felt like you saw something, a magical moment right there that actually like counted for something, and I loved the throwback to WrestleMania 10 with Bret Hart, where in this instance you had the Undertaker as that mythical force, I guess, that gave his blessing, and then at the end of it, at the end of the night, you had the two biggest faces of the company in the past generation coming out of the Russo's Aggression area, being John Cena and Randy Orton, being the ones that were out there endorsing the new champion as he was being lifted up on the shoulders, and they had almost every single person who had been involved in this story feud since with Roman Reigns and the Bloodline since it began. I believe Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens was out there, Jey Uso was out there, I mentioned Cena, Orton, there's probably a couple more guys. Punk was out there, but Rollins. Punk just came. Punk coming down to celebrate reminded me of when Donnie Wahlberg came out to celebrate with Bret Hart. Okay, you're here, sure. You can get in the ring, too. Why not? You know, you're here.
Yeah.
But that whole, like, you know, the locker room cementing is like, you know, hey, this is our guy. Didn't have seeing Bruce Pritchard on WrestleMania on my card, but, you know, it's what it is.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if Brucey's going to pay any out of that, but, you know, you got Bruce and then, you know, Triple H. It's just, it felt genuine, even though we can make a billion jokes about Bruce Pritchard right here. It felt like Cody Rhodes himself felt in that moment, that win felt, dare I say, real to him in what he had accomplished and, you know, finally overcoming the mountain. And again, major props going out to Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman. And I'm going to say that because this entire sequence of this main event felt very much like an old school ECW main event that we would see back in the day at the ECW arena a few blocks down the road, complete with the lights going out and the lights coming back on for The Undertaker. When it was over with, I was like, oh, that had Heyman's blueprints all over it right there.
Yeah, it was, again, I give the match 4.5 stars. I don't normally do that if it's going to have, you know, that level of shenanigans and everything like that, but it worked. Everything that they did worked, and it's like, if you're going to do a match that's going to have that much tomfoolery and everything like that, you better use those players and you better, you know, do it in that way. Everything they did really, really, really worked. The post-match stuff, I agree with you. It added to the show. It made it more of a genuine moment. I mean, look, you had -1 in the ring. You had a lot of, like, real-life people in there.
Yeah, I forgot he was
part
in
of
there,
this
too,
life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and his mom, you know, and Cody's mom, all that kind of stuff. So it made it, again, you know, CM Punk being in the ring, you know, being chummy with Bruce Pritchard and Triple H shows you that CM Punk is about as, in the year 2024, CM Punk is as punk rock as Green Day, essentially. So, you know, nothing stays the same as when they were younger, right? So,
right.
You know,
and something we glossed over, and I don't know if you caught this. Did you happen to catch the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, and Chris Jericho in Cody's video at the beginning of it?
Yeah. Never in a million years
would that have happened before.
And they've made it a part of the story in the past, you know, that he had to go away to prove himself and everything like that. And again, you know, there will still be, again, all the suck-ups in the company doing the media rounds will still be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, over there in the minor leagues, yuck, yuck, yuck. So there's still plenty of that coming from, you know, some of the smug people attached to the company. But, again, giving him props for his role in what was a revolution in establishing the first true competitor to them in like 18 and a half years, and he deserves his props for that. And so, again, he was already an important figure historically in wrestling. Now he's there as the babyface anchor at the start of, you know, the this if you want to call it the Levesque era, whatever they're calling it. They're again, part of it is Vince, you know, no pun intended, damage control. Part of it is
the Janelle Grant era.
Yeah, the Janelle Grant era, which we're coming out of, no pun intended. But as far as one of the things here is, and again, they're going to have the draft soon, so it won't seem as weird to me that as it did Monday night. But I mean, you know, Triple H coming out there and basically, you know, introducing as the most important wrestler in the company, Cody Rhodes, the world champion of the other show. So, again, that's what they really kind of struggle with is, I mean, you know, Damian Priest came out later on the Raw after WrestleMania and, again, treated as being important. But the level of importance versus Cody, did Damian Priest get a 45-minute segment that also included a protracted mano-a-mano with The Rock? No, he did not. So establishing more of a level of parity going forward is going to be important. So
I don't understand. I just want to comment real quick on the Damian Priest thing. I don't understand their whole idea of, hey, let's get over the world title, the World Heavyweight Championship as the workhorse title. I'm like, that sounds like the fool's title to me. That sounds like the title where I think Reigns actually said it best. You're number two, where you're working twice as hard for half the amount of money. I don't understand, right. I'm going to go over there and get the one that where I get paid the most. And not one person looks at this and goes, that's the top belt in this champ company. No, there's only one top belt. And
exactly.
I get what they're trying to do to, like, throw back, at least back in the day, you know, when they had the world, the original incarnation of the world heavyweight title, there was kind of this, you know, loosely you looked at it, it brought back of days of WCW and the late NWA. It wasn't the same belt, but
right.
It looks it was there. This is just a complete this thing looks like it was made up in 2K23 in the creative belt mode.
I'm not a fan of it, and it's a thing where, again, going forward, it will be interesting to see how they slot this out with both shows. Again, Netflix is going to have the A show with Raw because of what they're paying for it, because all the pay-per-view there, but you know, we shall see where this goes eventually. But all I can say is, Jake Digman, it is always an immeasurable pleasure to be able to come on with you and discuss these things and get through WrestleMania pre and post. And, again, can't thank you so much. And yet again, congratulations for being Nostradamus on the world title match.
I thank you for that. And before we go, one of these days we should do one of these on just a show we could be like, you know, there. Do a recap one of the big AEW shows.
Yes, yes. And I think a good time for that would be sometime prior to All in London. So that would be something
good
that we can target. I truly appreciate this, Jennings. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1721.